everyone. Welcome back to Killer Astrology. I'm your host, Laura, and today, November 1st, 2020, we're coming off the second full moon of October, which just so happened to be on Halloween. The full moon usually occurs once a month when the sun and the moon are completely opposite each other in the sky, and all of the moon, at least the part we can see, is reflecting the sun's light back at us. This, very poetically, is a time of bringing things to light so that they can be released, and this particular full moon was extra special. That's because the moon was exactly conjunct Uranus, the planet of revolution. And with Uranus in the mix, you might have experienced new realizations about what you need to release, and maybe those happened in an unexpected or surprising way. The full moon, because the moon and the sun move so quickly, is generally a pretty quick astrological event. But there's always other stuff going on, and one of the things that's happening this week is a square between Saturn, the planet of restriction, and Mercury, the planet of communication. This is basically a time where we need to make a compromise between speaking our minds and keeping quiet so we don't go too far, which seems fitting because this is election week. Now, this theme will stick around for a bit longer than a typical Saturn-Mercury square. It started around October 27th, was exact on Halloween, and will be exact again on November 6th, and that's just because Mercury is currently moving retrograde and will change directions to follow its previous path. So this may affect your communication in your personal life, but will also certainly have an effect on society as a whole. Now, given that it's election week and the election processes have been so different than they usually are, I wouldn't be surprised if this Saturn-Mercury square actually caused a delay in the communication about our election results. I'm wondering if maybe we won't have the results right away, and instead they'll come after the exact square, which would be around November 7th. Now, I'm not going to go deeper into politics right now, so I will switch gears and talk about something that's actually more infuriating. And that's our subject for today. In our episode today, we're talking about Luca Magnotta, the subject of the three-part Netflix docuseries Don't Fuck with Cats. This guy is honestly just a complete dickhead who not only hurt animals before becoming a murderer, but also felt the need to videotape it and broadcast the torture online for the entire world to see. I'd like to start at the beginning of his story, but Luca is a pathological liar, so I don't actually know what the beginning of his story truly is, save a couple of points that seem to have been corroborated by news sources. So the facts are slim, but here's what we know about how Luca started out. He was actually born Eric Newman on July 24, 1982, in Scarborough, Ontario, which is a suburb of Toronto, Canada. And he went by the name Eric until he changed it to Luca Magnotta in 2006. According to CBC News, he was the oldest child born to his mother, Anna Yorkin, and his father, Donald Newman, and the couple went on to have two more children after Luca was born. Luca was reportedly a quiet kid growing up, who wasn't inherently quiet, actually, as we'll see when we look at his chart, but rather was forced to stay under the radar because of the intense bullying he faced in school. As a kid, Luca loved classic films and psychological thrillers, and he spent a lot of his time at home watching those movies. His mom mentions that he loved the movie Basic Instinct, and even shows the filmmakers of Don't Fuck with Cats some of Luca's old things, which include a Basic Instinct keychain. Even as a kid, Luca had a capacity to take in these dark themes that other kids probably would have been scared of. And maybe that's because he had experienced some scarier things in his own life, from abuse or bullying, and maybe related to the films, which probably presented those themes in a more artistic way than he was living them. It's clear that he felt safe in the arms of his favorite movies, and maybe it's the deep love he had for films that motivated him to become an actor. Or maybe it was just his need for attention. As an adult, Luca was very active on social media and on various websites. He had a lot of different accounts that he used under pseudonyms, and he often wrote blog entries using those fake names. As one of his characters, he apparently wrote on a Psych Central forum that he hated his mother and that she ruined his life. This is according to an article by the Toronto City News, and that same article makes mention of childhood sexual abuse and strange forms of manipulation by his mother, like keeping him in diapers well into his childhood. We don't know for sure if this is true, but it seems safe to assume that Luca's childhood wasn't easy and that his parenting was inconsistent and likely unhealthy. At some point in his early life, his parents separated and Luca went to live with his grandparents. It seems he spent most of his childhood with them, but they actually also split up when he was a bit older. And there's some saying that he was homeschooled after that. It's unclear what his schooling was actually like. But he did spend at least 2 years in high school in the rural town of Lindsay, Ontario, where educators and his classmates noticed that he paid a lot of attention to his looks and that he frequently changed his hair color. In 2001, presumably once he'd left high school, Luca moved back to Toronto and began looking for work as an actor. But acting is a notoriously difficult field to get into, so he had to take another route to make money. At some point in the early 2000s, Luca began working as an escort, and he also started stripping at a club called Remington's. Then, in 2003, he started appearing in porn. He had a role in 4 porn films between 2003 and 2004, which probably served as a pretty good way to make some extra cash, and also was an outlet for his vanity. But at the end of the day, this wasn't the career that he wanted long term, and it must not have paid enough to provide the lifestyle he wanted either, because he went through additional and illegal measures to make money. In 2004, Luca met a young, intellectually disabled woman in Toronto who he convinced to apply for multiple credit cards, and then he stole her identity and used those cards to accumulate over $10,000 worth of debt. Surprisingly, he actually pled guilty to this crime in 2005, but was handed a relatively lenient sentence of 9 months community service and 12 months probation. At the trial, Luca's defense presented a letter from a psychiatrist who'd previously treated Luca, and that letter cited mental health issues and an occasional neglect to take his medications. This letter is actually what prompted the judge to give Luca a lighter sentence for his crimes, along with a mandate that he continue to take his medication regularly. But what was that medication for? Well, as it turns out, Luca had been prescribed antipsychotics and anti-anxiety medications, and he had a long history of mental health treatment. He turned 18 in 2000, and in 2001, his medical record starts reflecting multiple visits to crisis services and hospitals where he cited various mental health concerns. After his initial visit to the hospital in 2001, when he complained of hallucinations but didn't cite their content, a very adept doctor wrote, according to Global News, quote, "I am not sure what we are dealing with. I have a feeling he is looking for some secondary gain, but I don't know what exactly. I thought I should just make a note about this rather bizarre and interesting presentation. I am sure at some stage one of my colleagues will see this young man again and might encounter the same perplexing problem." Even with that doctor's caution, later that year, Luca did receive a diagnosis of schizophrenia and started living at a group home for people with mental health difficulties. In August of that year, he overdosed on benzodiazepines and then continued visiting various facilities for mental health support. Even though he'd received that schizophrenia diagnosis, I am very certain that he in fact did not have schizophrenia. I think that Luca went into the hospital on most of these occasions, knowing what to say to gain the oversight of a doctor and receive the caring support of people who wanted to help him. I think it was a personality disorder, as multiple doctors testified during his criminal trial, and actually as that original doctor hinted to in his note. In my experience as a counselor, I can say that in most cases, personality disorders don't just happen. They are the result of trauma, typically ongoing difficulties with caregivers, where their emotional needs are invalidated or otherwise unmet. This just happened to be a very extreme case. And a personality disorder isn't an excuse for publicly torturing and killing animals or people, but is still a significant factor in understanding who Luca was. While all of these mental health concerns continued to arise throughout the years, Luca, in his more public life, was continuing to look for work as an actor and a model. Throughout the early 2000s, he was auditioning for reality TV shows and modeling jobs. This was all while continuing to dabble in porn here and there. But by 2007, he was struggling financially and actually filed for bankruptcy, stating that he wasn't making enough money to pay off his debts. While this was happening, he continued auditioning for parts on reality shows like Cover Guy and Plastic Makes Perfect, but he couldn't secure a role. With rejection after rejection and delay after delay in getting the life he wanted, things started to get pretty damn weird. In the latter part of Luca's 20s, he began seeking fame in unconventional ways. In 2007, Joe Wilmington, a reporter who was working for the tabloid The Toronto Sun at the time, received a call from Luca, who presented himself as a popular model who could no longer secure work because there were rumors circulating about his involvement with Carla Homolka, a Canadian woman who had, alongside her husband, raped and killed multiple children in the 1990s. He was seeking the help of the Toronto Sun so that he could clear his name and set these rumors to rest and hopefully find work. But as we would later discover, this was all a publicity stunt. Luca had started those rumors himself, using various personas to craft comments and stories about the subject online. If you've seen the documentary Don't Fuck with Cats, you know that just 2 years before Luca finally committed murder, he was being investigated by a group of self-proclaimed computer nerds online, and what they found was absolutely incredible. It all started on December 21st, 2010, when a video was posted online that went viral. It was a video of a young man with longish brown hair covered by a dark green hoodie, playing with two adorable kittens on a bed. But then, with a cigarette hanging from his mouth, he bent over the bed and lifted the kittens, transferring them from the bed and into a plastic vacuum seal bag. And then, on camera, he sucked the air out of the bag and sealed it shut. This video was called One Boy, Two Kittens, and was posted by an account called You Only Wish 500, with a comment below that said, "All haters can suck my huge dick, LOL." Now, as you may imagine, people were absolutely infuriated by the asshole who so proudly displayed his cat killings online, and many of those people set out to find him. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details of this online investigation. If you're interested, definitely watch the Netflix film. But I will commend these people who must have had some strong Saturn-Pluto contracts in their chart on their pure genius and stamina for this investigation. The two main investigators were Deanna Thompson and John Green, who spent 2 years digging through Luca's videos and blog posts to find clues about where he was and who he was. It was actually an anonymous tip that gave them the name Luca Magnotta, and with that information, they stumbled on a treasure trove of online information. Fan sites, audition tapes, blogs, photo compilations that were YouTube videos. It wasn't long before they discovered that every single one of those sites and comments was made by Luca himself under a different false identity. And this was a way to feign fame and presumably to push his acting and modeling career forward through the illusion of having a following. Aside from their discoveries, the other important thing to note about this investigative group is that over the course of the 2 years they were looking into the cat killer, Luca made multiple appearances in the group, inciting more anger by sending them additional footage of his crimes. But he also made them scared. At one point, he sent a video of the inside of the Las Vegas casino where Deanna worked, and this was a clear threat that he had her information, and he had her wondering if her life was in danger. What the members of this Facebook group were seeing was not just that Luca was a heartless narcissist, but that he enjoyed playing games, leaving clues along the way so that others would chase him. Sometimes his clues were liking a specific video about a famous criminal case, or posting a new video under a new account named for a different serial killer's victim. It was his way to get attention, to toy with people's emotions, and to ensure that he never relinquished control over the games he was playing. From the very beginning of the amateur investigation into his identity, Deanna and John's group suspected that Luca would wind up torturing more animals and would eventually graduate to humans. And they were right. After the initial video was released, there were three more that were equally disgusting and had to do with animals. And then came the video that everyone feared, proof that Luca had graduated to a new level. On May 25th, 2012, a new video entitled One Lunatic, One Ice Pick appears online and shows an unconscious young man lying shirtless on a bed with his wrists tied to the headboard. The video is just over 10 minutes long, and in those 10 minutes, viewers witness another young man in a hoodie repeatedly stabbing the unconscious man in the chest with a screwdriver that's painted silver to look like an ice pick. By the end of the video, the victim is dead and his head is removed from his body. Now, the Facebook group that was investigating Luca received this video right away. And although they told the authorities in Canada about the video, the police didn't fully catch on until a few days later. At 10:15 a.m. on May 29, 2012, a janitor is in the alley behind the apartment building located at 5720 DeCarry Street in Montreal, Quebec. He notices a locked suitcase that's standing upright near the rest of the discarded trash, only it's leaking maggots. He assumes that there's a dead animal inside that someone had discarded of their pet in this cruel way, but for some reason he still decides to open it. He's horrified when he sees that not an animal, but a human torso is inside. He calls the police immediately and they come to investigate, but as a force their attention is divided, because that same day, they're responding to a troubling call from the headquarters of Canada's Conservative Party in Ottawa, the nation's capital, where someone has mailed a human foot. Later that day, a human hand showed up at the headquarters of the Liberal Party. Back at the apartment building where the suitcase was found, police also find documents with Luca Magnotta's name on them, along with a movie poster that matches the one that was seen in the ice pick video, and a wine bottle laced with sedatives. At first, they assume that Luca must be the victim. But when they find the video of him mailing two packages at a Montreal post office, they realize that he is, in fact, the perpetrator. Now, while police are on the hunt for Luca, police are also searching through missing persons files to figure out who their victim is. It doesn't take long to learn that Jun Lin, a 33-year-old university student from China, had gone home with Luca on the night of May 24, 2012, and shortly afterwards was so cruelly robbed of life. He was seen on security cameras entering Luca's apartment in a yellow t-shirt around 10:15 p.m. on the 24th. Apparently, Luca had told him that he would be helping him make a movie. At 2:06 a.m., the cameras show Luca leaving the apartment building alone and wearing the same yellow shirt that Jun Lin had been wearing just 4 hours earlier when he entered the building. Luca returns carrying a plastic bag just 7 minutes later and stops in the entryway of the building to admire himself in the mirror before going inside. And this wasn't just a quick look, a quick peek in the mirror. He literally walked closer to the mirror, played with his hair, and looked at himself for a while before moving forward. At around 2:55 a.m., police had Luca on video making his first trip to the apartment's trash room, and again wearing the yellow shirt. He continued making trips to the trash room to dispose of his evidence until around 4 a.m., and he was doing it very calmly, I should add. In the morning, he sent pieces of his victim to the Canadian political headquarters and then made his escape to France. Shortly after, he tweeted, "Je suis en cavale, LOL," which means, "I am on the run." In other words, catch me if you can. I mentioned earlier that Luca had written multiple blog posts under different names about himself. But he actually wrote a different blog post in his own name and signed it himself, and it was called, or it is called, How to Disappear and Never Be Found. Just a year after he publishes this post, he posts the first video of himself killing those cats. It's kind of a strange element in this case that, in my personal opinion, points to just how premeditated this whole affair was. Here's the beginning couple of lines from this blog post. Quote, "When making the decision to disappear, it is very important to understand that this is not a process that can be successfully accomplished overnight. For best results under normal circumstances, a minimum of 4 months is really necessary to successfully carry out the heroic actions necessary to leave your old life behind. This is certainly not an undertaking to be entered into lightly. Be completely sure of yourself before you commit to this. I think that Luca wrote this post truly believing that he would one day escape. And he liked to play games, he liked to leave clues, and I think this was just a breadcrumb. About a month after Luca committed his murder, he went to the hospital complaining of hallucinations like he had done in the past, only this time was different. This time he named them. He talked about being tracked by the FBI, he said he was being watched, and he claimed that other people could hear his thoughts. Now, I think that this was just one motion that Luca put into place as a way to establish a plea of insanity should he get caught for the crime he knew he would commit. And he did this within 4 months of his escape and, of course, of his crime, as he discusses in his post. Interestingly, though, he didn't listen to the advice that he laid out in that blog entry. One of the 3 points he mentions, along with cutting ties with close friends and family and getting false identification, is making sure to liquidate your assets to avoid a paper trail and discard of your credit cards. But once he actually went on the run, he used a credit card at an ATM in Paris, putting police closer on his heels. This could have been a misstep, a true mistake, or it could have been purposeful as a way to tease the police and remind them that while they were still chasing him, they hadn't caught him yet. And while police in France would not catch him, police in another country would. On June 4th, 2012, the attendant at an internet cafe in Berlin is reading the day's news when a long-haired young man with a French accent walks in and pays for time on a computer. This man looks familiar, and not in a good way. The attendant walks back to the computer with the customer and has the suspicion that he may in fact be the fugitive from Canada that he just saw on the news. So the attendant makes a couple of unnecessary trips back to the computer room just to sneak peeks at the customer's screen. And what does he see on the screen but a picture of Luca Magnotta staring back at him from the Interpol website? He immediately knows it's the guy, and he rushes outside to flag down a police vehicle. And within minutes, German forces were there. At 1:37 p.m. Berlin time, Luca Magnotta is taken into custody and promptly extradited back to Canada for his trial. It takes 2 years, but Luca is finally found guilty of first-degree murder in December of 2014 and is subsequently sentenced to life in prison. With all the illusion and deceit put forth by Luca throughout the years, it's hard to know what's true and what's not when it comes to his identity. But thankfully, we have astrology, and the planets can give us more insight into why he became this monster. Let's take a look. Eric Newman, now more infamously known as Luca Magnotta, was born on July 24, 1982, in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. We don't have a birth time for him, which you know typically drives me up the wall. But in this case, the chart is so striking that I honestly don't even care. There's so much obvious connection between his chart and his story that I feel like we don't even need the ascendant or the angles, although of course I wouldn't turn them down. The information we can gather from just a quick glance at this chart is so glaring it hurts, and it starts with his sun sign. Luca has a Leo sun with a Virgo moon and lots of other intense planetary relationships happening. His Leo sun, in true Leo fashion, is kind of the shining star of this story. It sits at a very intense 0 or 1 degree point, depending on his birth time, and it draws Luca out into the limelight, really like a moth to a flame. Leo is the home sign of the sun. It's where the sun is most comfortable, where it's most free to be itself. And the sun, at its core, is about being itself, or more accurately maybe about feeling itself, about confidence and being that ego. Any planet that resides within its own sign tends to be more powerful in a chart because it doesn't have to project its energies through the screen of another sign. So in this chart, if you couple the sun in its domicile, in its home sign, with the fact that it's at an early degree in that sign, we see that it holds a lot of weight, and it's very visible here in Luca's intense desire for attention. He is an attention seeker, and it's so obvious throughout his story. And this is a Leo trait. I don't mean to reduce Leo to a sign that's solely conceited and egocentric. It's not. I actually love Leos. At their best, they're friendly and warm and fun to be around. But they are also performers, and their shadow side is incredibly self-centered. In Luca's chart, this self-centeredness is really untethered. The sun placed in Leo is the main contributor to Luca's attention-seeking behavior and the expanded size of his ego, but there's more going on here. It goes beyond that. Everything he does, yes, seems to stem from a desire to be seen, but there's so much more complexity. Luca doesn't just want to put himself on display. He wants to push people out of their comfort zones while he's doing it. Very far out of their comfort zones, for that matter. He likes to shake things up, and he does it very well. Luca has a powerful early degree Leo sun that is exactly trined to electric Uranus, which by nature aims to shatter the status quo. A trine is a 120-degree separation between two planets, and it's commonly understood to be a good aspect. But as we see here, that's not always the case. A trine essentially means that two planets are working together with ease, that the person embodying these energies doesn't have to try so hard to combine them and use them in their life. Here, we have the sun in its home sign, shining away and showcasing its uniqueness, working with shocking and revolutionary Uranus in Sagittarius, where Uranus takes on an air of confidence and an adventurous edge. This is a truly fiery and explosive combination that's more intense for Luca than someone else with a Sun-Uranus trine, because both planets are in such early degrees. They're excited to use their energy, but they haven't mastered tact. This relationship is made more complicated by yet another exact aspect, another planet in the early degrees of a sign. This time, it's Jupiter in 1 degree of Scorpio. Jupiter is squaring Luca's sun exactly. And here, Jupiter elevates all of the qualities of the sun and Uranus combination that we've already discussed and makes Uranus even more bold, more surprising, and more dangerous, like a bigger, louder, hotter bolt of lightning. And it gives the sun the fuel to shine even brighter, asking it to strive to take up even more space. It's an overwhelmingly hot and fast combination, and a dangerous one. But it doesn't necessarily explain why Luca's methods of gaining attention and shocking the crowd were so dark, sexual, manipulative, and murderous. Where did that affinity for the morbid originate? Well, we see in Luca's chart that in addition to wanting to explode on the scene of life, his capacity for the macabre and disturbing runs very, very deep. And this is due to yet another exact aspect, not connected to the first one we've discussed, but separate, that of Mars and Pluto. Mars is a planet of drive and passion, with the archetype of Aries. I'm not referring to the zodiac sign Aries, but rather the Greek god of war. When we think of Mars, we tend to think of the warrior, like Aries, who rushes into battle without a second thought and with a solitary purpose, which is to win. In astrology, Mars can certainly carry all of those traits, but it also has a deeper meaning, that of spirit. Our Mars placement describes what fuels us, not just in times of passion and rage, but as we go about our daily lives. It tells us what we're living for, what motivates us to stay engaged with life on a daily basis. In the case of Luca Magnotta, we can't look at Mars as its own entity because it's sharing a degree with Pluto. We have to look at both planets together. In previous episodes, we've discussed Pluto as the planetary equivalent of the Greek god Hades, Lord of the Underworld. Pluto loves what's hidden beneath the depths of consciousness, the things that most of us don't want to touch, the things that we as a society, and by the transitive property we as individuals, have cast out or disowned. One of those things is sex, and another, of course, is death. So with this same degree conjunction of Mars and Pluto in Luca's chart, we get someone who's fueled on the day-to-day level by those typically cast out themes of sex and death. We get someone who's passionate about life because of its interaction with death. and someone, therefore, with a very strong capacity to face those themes head on. While his Mars-Pluto conjunction explains Luca's violent streak, it also says something about his vanity. These two planets are situated together in Libra in this chart. And Libra is the sign of balance, but its shadow side brings a heavy focus on beauty. Mars here contributes to the fact that Luca's fueled by looking good and having people acknowledge that he looks good. And Pluto here has turned that into an obsession. It's no coincidence that these two planets are associated with Luca's killing and that he also was focused on looking good while he did it. I can't stop seeing the connection in my mind between these placements in Libra and the video of Luca admiring himself in the mirror before he went up to his apartment to clean up after his murder. The mirror in this case is Libra, containing within it the man who had just used his Mars and Pluto energies to kill. Another person may have seen that brutal Mars and Pluto staring back at him from the mirror and probably would have felt some sense of shame or guilt. But in that moment, all Luca saw was his reflection, his beauty, his appearance, and his sun shining back at him in unabashed confidence. This is one of the many images that disturbs me so much about this case, and it's the image I'll leave you with today. Thank you for listening to another episode of Killer Astrology. I'm actually moving this coming week, and it's going to be really hard for me to record an episode for this coming Sunday, but I will try. I can't guarantee anything, though, but I can say that I'll be back on November 15th with another episode for sure. Until then, remember, people may lie, but the stars never do. If you enjoyed this episode, please share this podcast with your friends and consider leaving a 5-star rating on your podcast platform. You can follow the podcast on social media using the information in the episode description. Visit my website, killerastrologypodcast.com, for reference information for each episode and more. You can also schedule an astrology reading with me by going to killerastrologypodcast.com/services.